This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and on today's show, I have a returning guest, a personal friend of mine, and someone that I think you'll very much enjoy, Dave Evans. Dave is the co-founder of a consulting firm called Digital Voodoo, and he's probably best known to you for his first book, Social Media Marketing, An Hour a Day. He has a new book out. It's also a social media marketing book. It's called The Next Generation of Business Engagement. And this is where Dave leaps the chasm of social media, and instead of just explaining what it is, he talks about how to actually use it to drive revenue for your business. So welcome, Dave.
Good morning, Susan.
It's good to have you here. And we're live. We're in person today. It's coming up on the holidays. It's good to have you here. Last night, you showed up here, and we were decorating our holiday tree, and it just feels good right now, doesn't it?
It's great. I love this time of year. It's wonderful to be here.
Me too. And you've got your beautiful son, Brock, with an awesome holiday. Is he going to have a mountain of gifts?
Yeah, I'm sure Santa will be... We'll be spending extra time at our house.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you have a little kid, a super cute little kid like you do.
It's awesome. It's the best.
It is. Well, I'm really glad you're here in town. I know that you came in to do some board work for one of your boards. And later on in the show, I want to talk a little bit about your experience being on boards and how that helps in your consulting business and how you think about them, the two of them kind of being almost two sides to the same coin. But let's just start with your new book, Social Media Marketing. This is your second book. It's published by Wiley as well, that hour a day kind of category. That's an excellent series. In looking at my libraries, I think I've got Hollis's Twitter marketing and Jarbo's YouTube one and Zatella's pay-per-click book. And I think Wiley's doing a really good job with that series in general, don't you?
It's an excellent series. Chris Treadaway and Marty Smith have their Facebook Hour a Day, which was just released. Really, really nice series overall. They even have a box set now.
Oh, wow.
Where you can buy, you know, I think it's four of the titles, the Facebook title, the Twitter title, my first book and another one that all come together as a box set. So yeah, it's done very well.
It is. It's a well done series. You know, being a Dishy Mix host, I read a lot of business books. As a matter of fact, I just finished one, and I think I was relating this experience to you. I'm not going to say what book it was, but I was reading a book, and the whole way through, I kept thinking, I don't get it. I'm not really connecting the dots here. And at the end of the book, I thought, well, that was just a shitty book. You know, it wasn't actually and there were no particular dots to connect. It was just a really poorly edited, crappily executed business book that was kind of all over the map, which is the opposite experience I have with your books. And I have a question for you about that, and that is that with your social media marketing books, they're extremely organized, and you give people things to do to teach them how to learn about what you're teaching, the application of social to business strategy. You give them little things to do, and it's orderly and logical. Is that because you're such a good, it's you and Jake, are you such good writers, or is it that Wiley has this kind of forcing mechanism to organize you, or how does that all work out?
I think it's a combination of things. I tend to approach subject matter from not an academic in the sense of theoretical, but an academic in the sense of structure. When you take a class in school, when you're enrolled in a college class or whatever, there is a curriculum and there's a structure to that. And I've always found that a really good way, both, you know, for me to learn, but also for me to be able to present a relatively complex topic to someone else. You know, we may be tempted to offer up the sound bites or the anecdotes and so on, and then just sort of, okay, see how this works and walk away. But very often, that initial illumination, while it's interesting for people, it doesn't help them put things into practice. Yeah. And what I remember from my personal experience in college as a physics major was the importance of doing the homework. If you don't do the homework, the material that you cover in class is interesting. It's great. It, you know, it sort of makes sense, but it's that doing the homework that really grounds you in the discipline. So the combination of that structured approach plus homework assignments. So for example, in the the first book, Social Media Marketing, An Hour a Day, there are 55 one-hour exercises. And one of the questions that I get from people is, hey, I bought your book and I looked at it. How am I supposed to get this done in an hour? And, you know,
it's an hour a day.
It's an hour a day.
It's 55 hours.
Yeah, for 3.5 months. So, you know, but at the end of that, it literally walks people through, here's where this comes from, here's why this kind of works, and here's some things to do. And with each one of those things, there are one or two very easy to do, very accessible exercises that by the time you get to the end, you've gone from this introduction to what social media is, all the way through actually creating and presenting a plan with tips on how to create and how to present that plan.
Oh, yeah. And your worksheet. I mean, I have given that worksheet away. You can get it at hearthis.com, I think. Isn't that where you have it?
Read this.
You have it at readthis.com. I know you own some great domains. Readthis.com. You have that wonderful thought experiment worksheet for anyone who wants to put a social strategy together. They would essentially come up with their strategy by filling in the blanks. It's kind of like Mad Libs social strategy,
exactly.
Which is brilliant.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really good.
So then I've taken the same approach in the second book, where again there's this whole series of hands-on exercises and things to do. Each chapter kind of builds on the prior, and the concepts come together, and then you go out and you check these things out. So it's the combination of that plus, yes, Wiley does have a really really well done sort of submission and book outlining program, and as an author, as someone who writes a weekly column. Moving someone through sort of a concept in 1,000 words is sort of one thing. So in my column at ClickZ, ClickZ.com, in my column there, which I'd had prior experience with, you take the anecdotal idea or the fresh piece of news or whatever, and you write a little bit around that, right? And you move somebody. Well, writing a book is a very different proposition. In the sense that in 100,000 words, you know, over 10, 12, 14 chapters, I have to move somebody from like one fundamental point to another whole place, right? And I've also got to be mindful of the fact that this person is investing considerable time. I mean, you know, in some of the comments about my books on Amazon and so on, you know, you see people talk about the length of the book, the depth of the books, you know, and so on. So there is some work involved. So I have this obligation to move somebody from one starting point all the way through to something else, which is very different than writing something short like a column. And the Wiley process, my acquisition editor Willem Knibbe, is just great in this regard. And that outline has saved me more than once when I get lost in the middle of a book, like what am I going to write about next? Well, I just go back to the outline, and what the outline tells me to write about is what I write about. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've created the outline, but it's a really nice anchoring tool. So between that and my sort of natural tendency to break things down, break things apart, see how they work, and then present those sequential modules, I think it adds up to a pretty good series.
It's an awesome series, and it was funny too. I was looking on Amazon just recently, and one of the reviews that you got said, "Oh, you know, the next generation of business engagement. That book, it's too much theory and not enough, you know, practical, hands-on or whatever." He was saying it was too theoretical, and I thought, "Did you read the book? Because it's kind of the opposite of that. You know, you're the antidote to the theory that I see everywhere else." In that you give homework and actionable steps that you have to do. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
In terms of the second book, I get into some of the conceptual things, like, you know, what is a social object, and why does it matter when you're building a community? The social graph, why is it important? So, you know, I'm definitely sensitive to comments about theoretical versus practical. Then at the same time, I do try to balance that with, okay, here's the social object and here's what it is and what it means and so on. Now, here are 5 people that you can go and subscribe to their blogs and get a lot more in depth. And here are 5 things that you can do to go and understand, you know, how social objects really work. Right. So I try to balance those things out. And again, you know, it all adds up to you come away with this understanding of social business, of social media applied to business, of collaborative technology, really is what we're talking about here, applied to business in a way that if you work through the different sections of the book, you actually come out being able to do this and to interface with anyone else or talk with anyone else who's doing this. So for example, in the second book, there are 3 parts to the book. And right in the very beginning of the book, I say, you know, if you're interested in this because your team or someone that you're responsible for is working on this, read part one. And you'll have all the vocabulary, all the concepts, and some practical exercises so that you understand what it is that your team is trying to do, and then you can support them appropriately. If you are part of a team, but you're not directly implementing things, then read part one and part two. And part one gives you that same foundation. Part two then takes you into metrics and some other things and you know, some basic best practices and so on, so that you can effectively guide and lead a team. And then if you're actually working on this or you really want to get into depth, then obviously read part one, part two, part three, and you'll have everything. So, you know, I mention this because with any book, there are usually more than one way to read it. And again, the thing that I try to do in all my books is recognize I have different constituents, different groups of readers who are looking for different things. So I try to create little packages within the book where, okay, if you're this kind of person, then read this part. If you're that, read this part. If you want everything, then read the whole thing.
It's helpful. So it's very helpful. I think there are a lot of people who never really even read a whole book. So I really want to think about this for a second too, that what you've done is, in your first book, it was really an introduction to social media, social marketing, social networking, you know, how you do listening, what is Twitter, what is Facebook. This second book is more about operationalizing social media throughout the organization to leverage what's happening out on the internet so that it positively affects your revenue. So you like to say, maybe I would paraphrase what you'd say, which would be, it's about understanding what your customers want and giving that to them by using what they're saying and how they're interacting with your company. So that's social business. That's the idea that your business is going to be run based on your customers' needs and requests and frustrations, et cetera, right?
Absolutely. There's a very simple way of looking at this. When we say, you know, okay, listen to your customers and do what they want, and basically everybody will nod their heads like, yes, that's exactly what we do.
But it's not true. No one does it. The engineers build what they want to build. The CEO tries to keep everyone from killing each other, and the salespeople sell whatever the customer wants to buy, and the marketing people have an entirely different vision of what the hell the company does, you know?
Exactly. And so you get into this where you have, you know, really, really well-meaning people, well-meaning processes and so on. I mean, I realize this is kind of a sweeping generalization, but
of course,
you know, when we step back and we think about the experiences that we have, Tea Leaf just did a study of online commerce around Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and fully a quarter of the conversation around those experiences was frustration with consumers over poorly designed shopping carts and all this. I mean, this is like 15 years ago, right? Shopping cart technology was sort of, okay, here's how you do this, right? And so to put a customer through a process where, you know, you have to sign up or you got to do something else or this doesn't work or I added this to my, there's no excuse for that stuff, right? And yet it's still prevalent. So we look through, we see organizations that are siloed and they're competing with each other for resources, and, you know, healthy competition is good, but when decisions are made that actually, you know, sort of put the customer in the second place instead of the first place, well, you know, you can expect to hear about that on the social web. And so it gets a lot more complex when you actually try to implement this stuff. You know, you get into a cross-functional team situation, for example. Why does legal have to be involved in social business? And the answer is, well, where are your social policies coming from? You know, all of this kind of stuff. What are the exposures that your business faces? And it's much better to have legal involved early. HR is another one. Who are you hiring for the customer service teams? What kind of education are they getting on how to answer phones, you know, and so on, and all this kind of stuff? Because all of those things drive what people talk about. So when you actually step back and you say, well, okay, this is as easy as hey, let's listen to our customers and do what they want. When you actually take most businesses apart, they're really not set up to do that. I mean, they're set up to do a good job. We produce great stuff, you know, as you know, sort of world markets go. But at the same time, when we really start to unhook the business and say, okay, if we took your engineering team and we connected them directly to customers, and they were responding to customers and talking with them and learning about things, would that just fit right into the normal flow of your business, or would that be hugely disruptive? And in most cases, it's disruptive. and what social business is all about is reconnecting or reconfiguring a business so that it's not disruptive. Some of the early examples and things that we hear a lot about, you know, a couple of well-known examples. If you look at Dell and the IdeaStorm platform and now their internal EmployeeStorm platform. If you look at Starbucks and My Ideas, Starbucks has now implemented its 100th customer idea over the past, you know, given 2 years of running the My Starbucks idea. So 100 ideas doesn't sound like a lot out of the, you know, 80,000 or so submissions. But when you actually do the math on it and you say, okay, that's 100 customer innovations implemented in 2 years, that's one customer innovation being rolled into the store every week over the past 2 years. That's huge for a business to be responding like that. And I think if you look at the Starbucks experience and think of where it was 10 years ago and 5 years ago and now, there's a definite arc, and the brand has certainly reconnected with the majority of its customers because of this kind of orientation.
How does a business take all of the feedback that comes from all the various places, whether it's your 800 number, your online email, the social webs and sentiment information and those kinds of things? How does a company collect all of that and make it actionable now?
This is one of the areas where I'm doing a lot of work. One of the firms that I'm working with is Social Dynamics in Austin. And it's all about taking the conversational data that the Radiant Sixes and, you know, some of the others do a nice job of serving up to PR and marketing, but actually taking that one step deeper or a couple of steps deeper into the organization and connecting it back into CRM systems and other things, so that the roots of the conversations, what is it that's really driving customers to talk and to say the things that they're saying or request the things that they're asking for and so on. How can that be used to, you know, for example, shorten the innovation cycle in a business? So you start to connect this information up in ways that can actually drive internal teams, and you start to get a whole different result.
Right? When you say connect, you start to connect it up. How do you actually connect it up?
Through the preliminary tools are things like workflow and routing. We tag certain conversations certain ways and they automatically flow through whatever the intranet or, you know, whatever the internal system is within a company. And they flow to the employees who will then take care of those things. So complaints, for example, might go to a customer service manager, something like that, rather than just piling up in some massive dashboard someplace. I mean, you know, you've got to remember here, if you have a relatively small brand or you're in a relatively untalked about, you know, part of the market, you might be dealing with, you know, 1, 10, 100 posts a day, something like that. If you're Dell or Starbucks or somebody like that, it's 10,000 or 100,000 comments, you know. And then if something goes wrong, I mean, it's just like, you know, you just get buried in this sort of noise and the brand attractors and all that kind of stuff.
What's a brand attractor?
A brand attractor. One of our colleagues, Paul Rand, from now with Zocalo Group, he had created this map of customers from advocates to, you know, sort of people that will talk in general about brands and so on. And one of the groups that he identified in particular that has always stuck with me is this group called the brand attractor. And it's really important to understand, to recognize when you're dealing with a brand attractor, because the difference between the brand attractor and the disgruntled customer, you know, for example, is absolutely critical. The disgruntled customer is someone who is, you know, obviously they've got some kind of negative experience, but they're very responsive to a customer service agent reaching out and saying, okay, so we could fix this way, or we could do this, or thank you for your feedback, and, you know, and those kinds of things. The brand detractor, on the other hand, is permanently against your business, period.
Wouldn't that be a brand detractor?
A brand detractor, yes.
Oh, is that what
yes.
you're saying?
Yeah, brand detractor.
Oh, detractor. Oh,
yeah, not
I thought
brand
you said
attractor.
Brand attractor.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
brand
no, we all want the brand attractors. Yeah, yeah.
Got
exactly.
it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is a person who's never going to be happy no matter what you do.
Exactly. It's like their raison d'être, you know, is
yeah,
the
they've
fact
got a vendetta.
They think that you're evil. So you see this kind of stuff around, you know, obviously around things like cigarettes, around trans fats, around, you know, fast foods in general, around big box stores, around, you know, and there's these big causes that get picked, and these groups just go after those, and they literally, their livelihood is kind of defined by this, you know, here's this brand and they're against it. So you want to pick those, you want to pick those people out. So using tools like Buzzstream, for example, that enable you to gather some social graph intelligence about who it is that is talking about you, enables you to spot those people and then deal with them appropriately, which really amounts to isolating them from the rest of your customer base rather than engaging them and trying to convince them that no, we're actually okay, because they're not going to be sensitive to those arguments.
I'm going to put you in a difficult position, and you can wiggle out of this any way you'd like to, Dave.
I'm good at wiggling.
No, you're not, actually. You're probably one of the most straightforward people I know, so it's going to be fun to watch you squirm. So I'm so mean, aren't I? You know
I
love you.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
You came to get beaten up, yeah, by Susan Bratton. Exactly. Hardly. It's so painful, I know. So instead of giving plugs to the companies whose board you're on or who you've consulted for, what I'd really like to know is your personal opinion about who the top social companies are today. And I'm not talking about Twitter and Facebook, the ones that are, you know, that we all know are the big social platforms. I'm actually talking about those technology companies that appeal to marketing and operations and the CEO for being able to help a company implement a social business, what I would call a, you know, the positively spiraling uphill loop to revenue, leveraging this new social business monster. Who are those companies out there that you see really getting traction? Like, one that comes to mind for me might be Radian6, or it might be ExactTarget, companies that I think, oh, you know what? They actually have a nice little business going. That's going to be a big thing. Who are they in your mind?
So there's two that come immediately to mind, and that is Jive Software and Lithium Technologies.
They're similar, aren't they?
They're similar. They have so here's the wiggle answer. So they're similar, but they have some differences, right? I mean, a complete non-answered question.
That's okay.
Yet somehow it, you know, begins with a capital letter and ends with a period, so it must be an answer, right? Now the two companies offer community platforms, but there's a subtle difference. The Jive platform is really nice for collaboration between people, collaboration between employees. You see internal applications of the Jive platform. There's a similar platform called Synapse from Syn.in, CYN.in. It's an Indian firm, and these are really nice for building communities of either customers or employees or things like that just encourage collaboration, but very much for a work purpose, as opposed to a general discussion forum. There's lots of general discussion forum software. The Lithium Technologies platform is, again, it's a community platform, and it's really, really, really good at picking out the experts in a community, identifying and understanding who are the influencers, who are the people that you want to promote into, you know, community experts and so on. One of the realities of collaborative and forum-based customer support is very often there are certain customers who tend to have the right answers more than others, who are willing to participate more. They like the brand, they like the application, they have some affinity to it, whatever it is that drives them. They end up sort of emerging as leaders in the various discussions that go on. So, you know, you ask a question, and instead of getting some random answer like, well, what should be happening is this, or I think if you read the manual, you'll find that, which, you know, I don't know why people respond that way in forums sometimes, because it really doesn't help anybody. What you find is, here's this answer that has a couple of things to try. It's specific, and it tends to be right. And so other customers tend to vote those responses up. Well, the Lithium platform is really good at identifying. It gives the moderators and the administrators for the communities some tools to identify those people. And those people turn out to be just absolutely critical to building a strong, vibrant support community. So if you look at the combined offerings between Lithium and Jive, and certainly either can be configured to do more or less what the other one's doing. So it's not like you have to implement both of them. But as you look at those two platforms, you come away with out of the box stuff that enables collaboration and enables you to start to spot who are the potential leaders in these discussions, so that you can elevate, reward, promote, you know, otherwise take care of those people and really, really start to bring that action out. When you get communities that are working that way and you connect those things directly to your business, right? And what I mean by that is you have customer conversations that are going on. How do we let employees know what is it that they're talking about? What are the most important things that they're talking about? What are the most popular themes? Those kinds of things. And who are the most influential people? When I know those things within that community space, then as a business, I can really respond to those things and really, really build those into my practices. Other companies that come to mind right now, and Salesforce, great CRM platforms, great, you know, the beginnings of social CRM. The Salesforce platform is really pretty expansive when you look at all of the components from you know, both the core Salesforce platform into, you know, Chatter and other things.
Wait, before you go on, I want you to really explain, when you say the words social CRM, what do you mean?
So if we step back and say, so what is CRM, right? Customer relationship management. What we're talking about in general is a sales or
funnel.
Sales marketing
where an individual is in your sales funnel. That's CRM.
Exactly. And you know, is it contract renewal? Is it an additional purchase? Is it an upgrade opportunity? Is there a possible exposure to the business here? Is this person going to defect? It's like, you know, it's all around those kinds of things. If you integrate the social web into that data and you begin to pick up and mine the conversations and you look for the ways in which customers have connected with each other, or you look, you know, the other direction down your supply chain, like Ford does with the Covisint platform, all of its suppliers and business partners and so on are linked together so that they can talk about various business issues and parts that are supposed to fit together and, you know, and these kinds of things. When you start to look at the social web and social technology that way, and you take that same data and you apply it into the funnel process, what you realize is the process is actually bigger than the funnel itself, right? The funnel is part of the business process. And when we take this social information and look at it in the context of the business, then we move from CRM to this idea of social CRM, of really collaborating, of pulling customers into the business, making them and their comments and what they want part of the business, doing the same thing with our customers and suppliers, you know, and so on. When you distill it all away, what we're really talking about here, you know, and again, it drops back to the kind of simple view of what is it that we're really talking about? We're talking about, let's get all of our customers, partners, suppliers, employees, decision makers, and so on. Let's all get in a room and talk about how our business runs.
Yeah, right? let's get in a conversation.
Yeah, and that turns out to be, you know, fundamentally enlightening, but also like monumentally difficult for businesses to do, because they're just not set up that way. There are different silos that handle different aspects of a process for efficiency reasons. But when you actually try to sit down and have everybody just have a conversation, you find these kind of like sacred areas and so on, and you know, people that really aren't used to talking with each other. But that's really what we're talking about doing. And so you take this social data, and you integrate that into things that look like the traditional CRM process, and you actually get a much larger, a more holistic business process that comes out of that.
So a comment and then a question. The comment is that there is no possible way that any of these social, collaborative business solutions will always be as weak as the politics and bureaucracy of the people in those organizations. And it just further redoubles the importance of a CEO in creating an organization where the silos are broken down, where people are operating for a common goal, where flying under the radar is not allowed, where, you know, bullshit in meetings doesn't get tolerated. I mean, so much of it still comes down to the culture of the organization, because I can see that putting in any platform for collaborative social connectivity is really just as weak as the politics.
Absolutely. As it turns out, I mean, this is no surprise. It's like all of the business leadership, if you look at the themes over the past 20 years, this whole idea of culture and so on, well, now it's time to really put it to the test. Because if your organization does not have a collaborative culture, you know, any kind of social business, of collaborative business, of social technology and so on, is going to be a very painful adoption. And B, without that, that organization is going to find itself increasingly at a competitive disadvantage, and it's going to happen because of changes in the way innovation occurs. The whole innovation cycle can be socially or collaboratively empowered, right? And so businesses that aren't able to operate in this more collaborative way, they're going to get hit on all sides, right? They're going to get hit because they're not as responsive to customers. They're going to get hit because internally they're not as efficient as they could be. And they're going to have, you know, they're going to have a hard time attracting and retaining employees who have grown up as people using collaborative and social technology. They're not looking for a command and control environment to spend different parts of their careers in. They're looking for places where they can collaborate, work, be recognized for their unique skills, be tapped, work on things that are fun and challenging and so on. That's not command and control. You know, this idea of if I can't see you, you must not be working. We sort of laugh when we say those things, but it's like there are organizations that run that way. And I think every one of us recognizes the world just doesn't work that way anymore.
Well, and I just have to come back to Taylor and Brock, our children. I don't know where Brock is on the whole Facebook thing, but Taylor has Facebook connections in Kenya, in Holland, in Austin. You know, her friends are all over the world, and she's very used to having deeply connected virtual relationships that are based on video, imagery, writing, interaction with social games and social apps and things like that. And that level of connection and collaboration, it'll be interesting to see how the millennials being raised this way in the social world, you know, in the social online space, how that will impact this whole idea of social business.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the impact is just fundamental, and you can see it happening. I think Brock had an iMac when he was 18 months old. something like, I mean, literally, it's,
I can't one up you on that.
We had test equipment in the studio, and, you know, he showed an inclination for it, and we thought, okay, this is fine. And, he started playing with that. And the reason I mention it is he's been using digital interfaces for longer than he's been speaking. Right. I mean, kids begin to articulate it somewhere around 24 months, like words and.
Oh, no. See, Taylor was talking at one.
Words into sentences and that kind of stuff. Well, he's been navigating digital interfaces for longer than that.
Yeah. Right. That's cool.
And so when we think about, you know, my mom, I always use my mom's like the proverbial example, right? When she talks about getting email and so on, she talks in terms of the computer did this, or I'm going to go online, or I think in QuickBooks, still when you go to email someone an invoice, a little screen pops up and it says going online, you know, and it's like, well, no, actually we've all been online continuously for about 10 years now. But we have these references to the internet as this place or the computer as this device and so on. Well, for this generation coming along, those things aren't places and devices. They're just air. They're just part of life. And they're the tools that we use to connect with people and to build and sustain relationships across cultures, across all kinds of things. Certainly as Brock has traveled around and met people, those relationships stick. The relationships that he builds online, the relationships that he builds with friends, He's working with the Lego Mindstorms kit. He's beginning to program in Python, and you know this is at 10 years old, and it's like, you know, it's not like, okay, so here's this, like this kid. It's like this is what his peers are doing. They're learning these kinds of things, and where I would have taken, you know, some wood and nailed it together and made a go-kart, he's taking some lines of code and building it together into a little process that does something for him, right, or shows him how something works. And so their adoption and their use and their view of technology is much more holistic, inclusive. What's the word? You know, it's just part of who they are.
Yeah, it's integrated into their way
for
of
me,
being.
Yeah, for me, it was something that I learned at, you know, 15 or 20 years old, and for my mom, it was something that, you know, it's sort of like an appliance. It's like a TV. Well, when you look at business and you say, okay, so how does a business then run in a world of people that are used to this always on, always connected? Somebody's calling me, you know, I've got a business call going on, but I'm also looking at a Facebook profile or something like that. I mean, they're kind of cliche things, but when you step back and you think, what does it mean to operate like that? And then what does it mean to operate in a business culture of, if I can see you, you're working, if I can't, you're not? And so this whole idea of virtual work and working from home, and, well, you weren't in the office, and, you know, you just see this huge conflict coming. And so businesses that adopt and understand and really build into this and make it part of their culture, they're going to have one distinct roadmap in front of them, one distinct set of possibilities. And businesses that don't adopt this it's going to be harder to get the people that they want. It's going to be harder to compete efficiently and so on. So the impact is really pretty big.
I want to go back to something that we were talking about with regard to social CRM that I don't really understand. I understand CRM and I understand the Salesforce model or the Siebel model or the idea of the funnel. And I understand the listening platforms where they collect not only the de facto information that people are saying about a brand or its competitors or the subject matter out in the world, but also specifically what, you know, influencers or customers or prospects are saying. But how does that all come together in an actionable way? I've actually never seen a demo of social CRM software, but that was a lot of S's for a sibilant person. Social CRM software. How does it all work, Dave? Tell me. Can you, because I'm visual and this is auditory, can you paint us the big picture of what that looks like? That's what I need to understand things.
Sure. I think to look at Dell as an example, right? I think everybody understands at least the parts of this and certainly understands the product. So it makes a great example to talk about. Plus the fact that they've just done some really solid work in the area. If you take the components of Dell's social business, so to speak, you have the support forms built on the Lithium Technologies platforms. You've got the Dell support forms, largely customer supported, millions of users, handful of moderators, lots of customers who are willing to put in a little bit of extra effort and so on in helping other customers, right? So you've got that element.
So you obviously have a place where people can come together to interact with the brand.
And to solve problems. I mean, the thing that makes a laptop or a PC or, you know, any personal device like that so complicated is not so much the hardware. I mean, yeah, there's technical challenges in building these things, right? They're pretty amazing when you actually get into how they work. But what makes them complicated is the fact that anybody can install anything on it. And suddenly you have these failures that are the result of, you know, three people in the world have this thing installed and it collided with something else in memory, right? Or whatever the root of the fault was. Well, for a customer service team to try to diagnose something like that, it's painstaking. Whereas if you take that problem and you release it into something like, you know, a well-populated customer service form, chances are somebody else has experienced the same thing and has actually figured it out. So if I can connect those two people together, my customer service unit not only performs more efficiently, but I can see earlier what are the trends, what are the patterns, is there something that we need to be aware of as hardware designers or as retailers or, you know, whatever the case is, I can actually see that in the support form. So Dell has that piece in place. The next piece of this is the IdeaStorm, right? The Dell IdeaStorm platform. It's built on the Salesforce platform. Here you've got customers submitting ideas, and you know that's certainly nothing new. You know, suggestion boxes have been around for a long time, but you have customers submitting ideas. Then you have other customers that are voting on which ideas they would like to see. So the Dell product managers can now look at the voting results, and they see the things that large groups of customers really want. So they can prioritize this. If you have, you know, 100,000s of people submitting ideas, how are you supposed to make sense out of that? Well, if those people are voting on their ideas and there's 10 or 20 that are floating to the top, it's possible now for me to pick off those ideas and work on those. So now you've got two blocks in place. You've got customers taking care of other customers, right, with the community moderators watching for, you know, practices between people and so on, making sure that they're consistent with the way they want the forums to operate. And then you have the ideas platform where customers are now offering up their ideas and voting on those and signaling to, you know, the decision makers within the organization, this is what we'd like to see. Now you close this up into the social CRM loop, and you look and you look at, for example, Linux on the desktop, you know, Linux coming pre-installed on Dell laptops. That came about as a result of the IdeaStorms platform. So now you have this connection where, you know, Dell certainly knew that customers wanted Linux, but it was like, how many? How important is this? We have this relationship with Microsoft. These are complex issues. By connecting their customers directly and understanding how many people really wanted this, it became evident that, you know what, we have enough of a customer base that it is worth going after this. And as a result, Linux was made available as a pre-installed option. So it's those kinds of things that you step back and you look at it, it's like, well, that's pretty straightforward. But then you look at what were the components that really drove this, and it wasn't an internal task force at Dell that did some customer research and some focus groups and said, you know what, we need to put Linux on the desktop. It was, here are millions of customers in support forums, and they're talking about these issues, and the Linux discussion is a vibrant part of that. And then on the ideas platform, a lot of people wanted to see, you know, people had the idea of Linux pre-installed instead of just buying the laptop, wiping it off, and doing it yourself. And a lot of other customers supported them in those things. And so the product managers then saw that and said, okay, we can now make the business case to do this. So you look at those things and you say, okay, these building blocks, this way of connecting customer ideas back into the business, this is different than the business going out and surveying some customers and so on. Because if Dell had gone and surveyed its customers, what it would have found was Windows is just fine because that's 90% or 95% of its customer base. Well, that other Linux group turned out to be very important and you know, obviously very, very supportive of the ideas. Then there's a third piece in this. So now Dell implements a thing called Employee Storm, which is basically the same. Here's my idea. Here's the voting around the idea. Here's, you know, what we could implement and whatnot and so on. They implement that internally. So employees have a way to do the same thing that customers are doing with regard to the way that Dell runs, right? So you take another step toward this social business. And all of these components fit together. They're all built around the same fundamental collaborative technologies, but they start to actually change the way the business operates. Then Dell takes additional steps, right? It goes in and it builds the entrepreneurs platform, right? The Take Your Own Path. It builds the digital nomads community. And all of these things, we can talk about social objects. They're all built around lifestyles, passions, causes of the people that are using the communities. They're not built around Dell products. Are they, you know, they're overtly Dell branded. They're very transparent about that. They certainly connect into Dell hardware and Dell small business services and things like that. Entrepreneurs use a lot of Dell equipment. Digital nomads use a lot of Dell equipment. Dell's a very natural part of the conversations. But the communities themselves were built around the interests of those customer groups. So as you start stacking these pieces on top of each other and you look at Dell's use of Twitter, the Twitter channels, you look at the Dell social media Facebook business page that Dell has created for small businesses, take all of its learnings about social media, make that available to its small business customers to make them more successful, right? Then they buy more hardware. So all of this stuff, it's wrapped together in business sense, in collaborative technology, and so on. And it starts to actually change the way the business operates. And it comes together in these very specific innovations, like the way Starbucks has done some of its stuff, the way Dell has put Linux as a pre-installed option. All of these things are very concrete results that happened because of this collaborative technology, and that happened faster because of that. Right, so this is when you start to dissect social CRM, it's pretty understandable when you get it down to the functional blocks kind of view.
It makes a lot of sense. I was thinking more about the sales side of things when I was thinking about CRM. And so what you've really described, how it's actually being effective. Thank you. And that was very, very, a very logical approach, which is indicative of your books and your work. I'm going to go back to one thing that I still had as a little bit of unfinished business. And that was that you mentioned Jive and Lithium as social collaboration platforms. Those can be used internally or externally with customers, prospects, whatever it might be. They're very expensive in the grand scheme of things for some organizations. Are there any kind of, it's not that they're outrageously priced, but you know, they're enterprise level solutions. And so I'm always sensitive to the fact that a Dishy Mix listener could also be an individual or a consultant or have a small business or a medium business and not have $20,000 or $30,000 a year to spend on managing a system like that, and not including the, you know, headcount that it takes. Are there any quick and dirty solutions that get you a good way there without a lot of bells and whistles that you've seen?
Yeah, there are many platforms, but a handful that I can talk about just in a little bit more detail. At the entry end of this in terms of the price, because you're right, you know, Lithium and Jive, these are enterprise solutions. You have things like WordPress, right? If you take something like WordPress and BB Press and a theme site like WP Remix, right, where you can go buy, you know, skin packages and not just skin packages, but also interface packages. You put that together and you've got a fundamental blogging platform, which, you know, can be used as the basis of a content management system. Then you layer onto that a WP Remix template set that has both the blog templates and then static content templates, things like that. You add in something like BB Press, which is discussion forums and these kinds of things. And you've got the basis of what's in the Lithium and the Jive platforms. You have member registration, profile control, all of these kinds of things. You can implement rating and review and reputation management plugins. Those are all available. So you can start to build the things that are essential, which is customers being able to understand who other customers are, which means robust profiles and profile completeness indicators and things like that. Then you have tools that enable them to rate and review content that each other posts. So you can do things like, you know, the ideation platform. You can build that in Drupal, or you can just build it in PHP. You can build it into a tool like WordPress or BB Press. You can build these things in. Some of it becomes a trade-off between how much work do you want to do, how much do you really need. But core things like reputation management, people being able to vote up and down each other's content and those kinds of things. Some of these sort of fundamental best practices, you can certainly achieve all of that with something like WordPress, BB Press, and WP Remix. Then you have a little bit more DIY platforms, things like Expression Engine, right? It's built on PHP. It's built around the CodeIgniter framework. You can use that to build very robust applications, community and collaborative applications. If you want an in-place content management system, go with Expression Engine. If you're looking to build the functionality, then start with the CodeIgniter platform and look at Expression Engine. You can get some ideas from that. Use the CodeIgniter platform and build the blogs and build those kinds of things. These are available. You know, these are a few hundred dollars for licensing and $100 a month or so for basic shared hosting at a place like Engine Hosting, which is dedicated Expression Engine hosting services. So very 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 definitely very accessible stuff. And then obviously you have tools like PHP and the various frameworks that go with it. You can build all the stuff up. Drupal is another very well supported community in terms of building collaborative applications and creating a content management system that has the collaborative underpinnings, so that as you go to implement some of this collaborative connectivity between customers and your employees or those kinds of things, you've actually got the tools available to do that. With the Techrigy, now Alterian, with their listening platform, with NetBase, which is another one of the companies that I work with, they have APIs and ways of extracting data and then pulling that data into modules that you would create in PHP or through Drupal or something like that. So, the answer is you can do all of the stuff that Lithium and Jive enable you to do. The question is, A, how much of this do you really want to do? How much scale do you really need? If you're enterprise, the decision is clearly go the Lithium Jive route, because even though the licensing fees are what they are, what you're going to find is that's quicker, cheaper, easier, and very often we're in this time pressure to get into the market and operate, versus going and literally rebuilding everything, building a reputation management system, building the blog system, building all of this kind of stuff, the profile system. There's a lot of best practices, a lot of thought leadership that has gone into the Lithium, Jive, and similar platforms. If you're a small business, the reality is, A, your requirements are a little bit more basic, and you can very, very adequately take something like WordPress and or Expression Engine or something like that, and literally build all of this stuff and have exactly the same things running.
Another one that popped to my mind is Get Satisfaction. If you want a really simple customer support implementation, Get Satisfaction can work. I'm actually going to have Wendy Lee, the CEO of Get Satisfaction, on Dishy Mix coming up.
Oh, super, super. Yeah, yeah, and that's another really a really important thing for people to understand. By and large, the tools needed to operate as a social business exist. It becomes this mental challenge of, I don't own that, or that isn't mine, or that's somebody else's. And Get Satisfaction is a great example of this, where literally it's their platform. your customers will go there and support them, you know, try to support themselves if you don't provide some other mechanism. Well, you know, the positive way of looking at that is you can actually use that platform instead of investing in your own customer service platform. For smaller businesses, for, you know, and so on in particular, that makes a lot of sense. But mentally, it means that as the decision maker, you have to be comfortable with doing that. And so there's this whole second, you know, we talked a little bit about the silos and things like that, the cultures of organizations. There's also this not invented here, that's not my software, that particular function isn't mine. And I encourage people to look at the entire social ecosystem and start looking around and seeing what's available that I could just sign up for and use and start running my business this way. You know, Twitter as an early customer service sort of indicator, adopting that as a channel. I mean, how hard is it to adopt Twitter as a channel and just say, customers, you want to talk to me in real time? Post it, you know, because we have somebody who's following this. I mean, that's just, it's not a trivial thing. You have to think about what it means. If you tell your customers, post on Twitter and we'll get right back to you.
You better get back to them.
It's 24/7, right? So, you know, be careful in the expectations that you set. And there's no reason that you have to set that expectation, right?
Yeah, you can put your boundaries around your Twitter channel.
Totally, totally. Mm-hmm. But to overlook a channel like that and say, well, you know, I don't know if I want to use something that I don't own and control, and you know, we're past that. You've got to look at the whole ecosystem and say, what's sitting out there that I could use right now, and put to work and have this stuff working. Tools like Hootsuite for managing. I mean, there's so much stuff out there.
Objective marketer.
Yeah, exactly. I talk about these in both my books, and obviously, you know, if you Google anything near social business or something, you're going to find these tools. Look at those things and just sort of sit down and take stock of those. How many of those could I knit together and, you know, be halfway down the road without spending anything, right? Even if you replace it later, you get a lot of learning out of it up front.
That is very true. It helps you identify what you actually need.
Totally.
Yeah, it's
totally
better to start that way, I think, often. I've been really enjoying this conversation, and I'm glad that we had the time to get a little deeper into just what social business is and why it's so important. And I also want to talk specifically about social objects and social graphs, Dave. I want you to explain where those are, how people think about them in the world today. So we're going to do a part two series of Dishy Mix. So next week, you're going to have Dave again, and we're going to talk about social objects and social graphs. And does that sound good to you, Dave?
That's great.
Yep. Awesome. So you've gotten to know Dave Evans. I would encourage you to go back and listen to the first Dishy Mix I did with Dave. He gets deeply into social community building in that particular episode, and it's quite good. It's actually the bonus segment of that one that's around community, if that's helpful to you. I'd also encourage you to go out and get Dave's book. He's going to give me one copy for the Dishy Mix Facebook fan club. That's on Facebook. Just look up Dishy Mix. You'll get a copy if you post and request. I'll choose my favorite, and you'll get Social Media Marketing, the Next Generation of Business Engagement. For the rest of you who aren't going to do that, you can just go buy it on Amazon.com. It's an excellent book. And Dave, why don't you just give us some of the places that people can find you, Digital Voodoo, et cetera. So if people want to connect with you more, they can do that.
Sure. The easiest is just Google Dave Evans social media. And literally you'll get all the white papers, the articles, the sites, everything. The primary place, go to readthis.com, readthis.com. That's where I blog all all the information about the books and so on is there. And then down toward the bottom of that page in navigation, you'll find the links to Digital Voodoo, which is my consulting site, to Hear This, which is our podcasting service, you know, and all of the related links. My family links, all that stuff is down there.
You can see pictures of Brock and Jen.
Exactly. See pictures of Brock and Jen. The easiest thing, though, just Google Dave Evans social media, or go to Amazon and Google Dave Evans, and social media will pop up, and you'll see the books that I've written and participated in.
Perfect. Thank you so much for everything you've given us so far. I'm looking forward to next week's show with you, too.
You're welcome, and likewise.
Happy holidays.
Yeah.
All right. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Dave Evans and gotten a lot of new thinking about maybe what you need to do in 2011 with your business. I'll connect with you next week, I hope, for part two of this awesome episode. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Have a great day. Talk to you next week.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.